This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. Since 1988, Whitetail Institute has been perfecting annual and perennial seed products specifically for hunters who plant food plots. Their seeds have been engineered to be palatable, high in protein, and extremely attractive to deer. Whether you live in the Deep South or Midwest farm country, they have products that will help you grow your best food plot yet. For more information about their seeds and their blends, visit whitetailinstitute.com. Enter the discount code SE15 for 15% off.
Welcome to Maximize Your Hunt, the podcast dedicated to those who want the most out of their hunting property. This podcast explores land management, habitat improvement, and hunting strategies that will help you maximize your time in the field. Follow along as industry professionals that live and breathe whitetail deer share their secrets to success. And now, the founder of Whitetail Landscapes, your host, John Teeter.
I'm John Teeter with Whitetail Landscapes. This is Maximize Your Hunt. Welcome back, everybody. Hopefully, everybody's doing well. Hunting season is open here in New York State. I have not had a chance to get out. I've been quite busy with my daughter. She's been quite a handful here over the past few days, so we haven't had a lot of time to get out. Although, I will say this, and I was asked this recently by a client. He says, I keep hearing this statement about not hunting mornings. We've had a couple really good mornings early October here in upstate New York, and I'm assuming in the northern climates you may have experienced something similar. Whereas the deer are moving at a high rate in the morning. They're transitioning from bedding to bedding location based on wind shifts. And I'm talking older age class deer. I'm also seeing a fair bit of chasing in our area, grunting, that type of early activity you may see, sparring. So the type of activity is directly correlated to the social dynamic of the deer in your area. So if you're targeting large, mature bucks, some of the strategy may be finding those isolated bedding locations, waiting for a wind shift or weather change during that morning period, particularly on high-pressure days. That means those better, I would say, heiress-type days. And then hunting into a transition point from one bedding location to the next. And what you'll see is continuous movement as wind shifts in these early season scenarios. And those are morning hunts. That's a strategy for a lot of folks. You may have particularities about the deer that you're targeting that you believe don't allow morning hunting. And I've seen that quite often. But I want to just make sure people have, you know, my tactics, my strategy. I would have had a good chance the other morning. I was going to pick a stand site, but again, I had some stuff going on with my daughter. I was probably going to be within 100 yards of a target deer. And I knew, you know, there's a good chance that a deer would be moving through that area in this wind condition. And true to form, that's exactly what happened. So it's knowing your area, knowing how deer use your property and being able to target an individual deer and hoping for a high success rate. I also wanted to mention another point. I really appreciate I've gotten some reviews recently. I'm going to be sending out bumper and I guess you'd call them bumper window stickers, really thick. Whitetail Landscapes are gorgeous. They're 5x7. You know, wear them with pride or put them on your car with pride. And I'll just read off one of the reviews that I got. I really appreciated this. And there's a few winners here that I'll mention over the next few podcasts. Dylan Nekwadich, appreciate you providing the use. Here's your review. I always look forward to new podcasts from John. He's always enlightening me on new aspects on how to look at sometimes difficult situations, and how to overcome that. It is also appreciated how in-depth the conversation is on certain topics, such as proper seed and soil conditions for optimal crop and deer connectivity. So I appreciate the comment, appreciate your feedback. Please go into Apple iTunes. I will send those out free as charge. Dylan, get a hold of me, john@whitetaillandscapes.com. Send me your address, and I will mail you out a sticker. All right, I've got an excited podcast, I think. It may not be too long, but it's going to be a client kill here right off the bat. And the reason I wanted to put this in is for motivation and to give some insight into maybe some, you know, difficulties, you know, clients have this time of year not finding a target deer and you know, what you can do to your property to kind of emphasize interest so you have high success. So pulling in those good quality bucks. So we've got a client here, and he's been on before, John Audette from Vermont. We've had him on a prior podcast, and he killed a dandy four-year-old in Vermont, a stud four-year-old for their area. I'm pretty impressed. So let's hear about his hunt and listen to his early season tactics. Hey, John, how are you?
Hey, John. Good morning. How's it going? Good
morning. So, you know, congrats. We'll talk about your deer. And if people aren't familiar with you, I've worked with you guys, I don't know, 3-4 years ago. We did some cutting out there. You know, hopefully, I'd like to come back to Vermont. I've got some clients actually out in Vermont this year, but I'd like to visit the farm. And I was going to talk to Ryan when I got a chance. I'd almost like to hook up for a little turkey hunting. So I'm kind of excited to kind of get out your way. So I wanted to just ask you a couple questions. I know you killed the big buck, and we'll get to that. But this season, you had some pretty difficult weather conditions. I was in Vermont right around the time, you know, you were kind of chatting with me about some of your issues. So let's talk a little bit about, you know, the summer crop season, things that you did, and how the farm's looking.
Yeah. So it definitely, this year was probably the toughest in all my years of hunting. One of the toughest years as far as, you know, trying to get crops established and whatnot. We started out our year, you know, cold and wet as pretty much everybody did in the Northeast. I think we had a run going of like 40 something weekends with rain going into June. So it was tough, you know, your weekends would come and it was cold, wet, dreary. You couldn't get much done. And then literally within, you know, a couple of weeks, it just changed. All of a sudden, no rain, temperatures started climbing. And, you know, by end of June, things were drying up really fast. You know, I was able to get my screen planted. I got my beans in, my corn in, and things were looking okay. I mean, as you know, it's heavy clay ground here. So the clay holds moisture probably better than a lot of other types of soil. So things were doing okay. But then it just progressed. It, you know, we started getting temperatures in the, you know, high 80s, low 90s consistently with windy days. And it really started drying us out big time to the point that, you know, the corn just kind of went to a standstill. I kind of started to panic and, you know, we've got a pond here right in front of the house, as you know, and I started trying to haul water out to water my corn. The beans seemed to be kind of at a standstill. They weren't really, you know, changing much. They were there and green and trying, but the corn was really struggling. And, you know, in my 20 years of working as a lineman, this was probably our busiest summer as well. So I was really challenged with time and, you know, I quickly realized there's no way I can keep up with this. And, you know, we had the same forecast everybody was looking at where it's like, well, the chance of showers here, chance of showers there. And, you know, my screen, actually down where I harvested my buck, luckily that's kind of a lower, wetter area. So the screen was coming in good down there. My beans were coming in good. I started to get some weed competition on my beans, so I sprayed some of them. And, you know, the weeds died off really easy because of the drought, and my beans were left so exposed that the deer just pounded them. And I quickly realized that, you know, this isn't going to work. So I, you know, stopped spraying and left the rest of my beans, you know, to compete with the weeds. And it was dual fold. You know, the weeds helped kind of shade and help hold some moisture in for the beans. So those beans did all right. It was probably mid-summer, I bought an excavator and I started messing around with it here on the farm. There were some spots here that, you know, historically I've never been able to even get near brush hogging any time of year because it was so wet. And I brought my excavator into those areas and tried digging down as far as I could reach, whatever it was, 10, 12, 14 feet deep, straight down. And it literally was powder the whole way. And, I was like, oh boy, this is not good. So I'll fast forward you through the summer. You know, I've got beef cows here and we do hay the fields and whatnot. And we got a really good first crop of hay off of our field. And then everything was so dry after that, that we were really, really struggling to even, my cows, I started feeding them hay that I would normally not feed them until winter, about mid-July, because everything was just burned up and dead. And, everything, the fields were terrible. My father hayed 10 acres of his hay field and got 2 round bales where he normally would, get 40 or 50. I did square bales here on the farm and, I did 3 acres and got 40 square bales. It was just terrible. Tough, tough, tough. So then, our first real measurable rain wasn't till just a few weeks ago, middle of September. We got a 3-day rain event of maybe 2 inches, a little bit more over, that time frame. And up to this point, I had screen seed, that was still sitting in the ground. I had beans that I had tried planting a little later. I was constantly monitoring weather and thinking, chance of thunderstorms, I'm going to try to get some seed in here, do this, till that, whatever. And we just were constantly getting left out of rain. So it's kind of crazy, but that we got that rain in September and seed that had been sitting there all summer, had a bunch of sorghum that has sprouted now and germinated in the last couple of weeks and trying to grow, that it's been sitting there. That shows you how dry and miserable we were. I had hopes of getting through this. One of the benefits was we did have a decent apple crop. We've got some pear trees. Everything was struggling, but managed to hang on to fruit. Although, unfortunately, a lot of the trees started morphing, fruit pretty early just because of the drought situation. But it started giving deer something other than brush and bramble to chew on. And we also had a really good acorn crop here this year, which is rare for us. We seem to get a good one every 5 or 6 years. And it just happened that, we got some decent nuts this year. So that's kind of helped, carry the deer through as well. And, we had a couple bucks that we carried over from last year that we knew were around. I didn't see them a lot on camera this summer, but enough they were still in our zip code. And I put a lot of effort into this plot where I actually ended up harvesting my buck, just knowing that, just the vast amount of area here and what I normally can manage was becoming unmanageable because of the drought. And I realized I kind of had to put all my eggs in one basket and try to have this good spot so that I could hopefully increase my odds on trying to harvest one of these bucks that we had carried through. Yeah, so I can roll right into my hunt if you want.
I want to talk a little bit about this whole water capture thing, because that's one of the reasons I want to work on the farm again, because I have a whole host of new concepts that I'm working on. Next year I'm going to be in New York working on a client pretty exclusively. And I've been starting to have more clients like that where I'm now engaged 100%. And the theory is how to create this better water catchment, storage use, and efficiency across the entire landscape. So even if you don't have, you're not able to make it rain, we're capturing all that rain through the entire year. We have a whole system of design now where even when the drought comes and we have drought for 6 to 8 weeks, we're fine. And you have a property that would be a great candidate for that. And so some of it's just rainwater harvesting techniques, some swales, contour trench, you know, scenarios. We're going to, you know, some terracing. We're going to make areas more permeable. And it's some of it's managing the soil differently. So, you know, I mentioned that other client because I'm putting in a whole system of design for that client to kind of have these water capture systems where even if it doesn't rain for a long period of time, you're still going to be a good place. And, you know, and it, that even relates to how you cut the forest and having a forest stand that has a little more efficiency in and amongst solar capture and water retention. And then it's selecting certain species that are going to be do better in these conditions. We're starting to see a shift. And I told Josh this the other day, we're starting to see a shift where year in and year out, we're seeing some species that are in the understory struggling a lot more than they used to. And it's purely because we have these long stages of no rain. And so they're going to phase out of the understory if they have, you know, multiple years where they can't photosynthesize. So, you know, it's trying to think around those particular issues and diversifying trees in those areas, some that do better in those conditions and some that do worse, but still balance that. And so a new forest thinning technique that I want to introduce. So there's just a lot of stuff that will actually help acorn production, increase diversity in the landscape, and we'll do better at water retention. And everyone's like, wow, that sounds really, really cool. And it is really, really cool. And I would say it's state of the art because it's just thinking completely different about habitat design and manipulation. And I only bring that point up is because I'm not telling everybody the answer how to do that because it's kind of my IP, so to speak. But you can make a property productive in these conditions. And I am, when we had my habitat day this year, everybody who came to that event, and there were some clients there that came to the event was like, hey, we've had a drought for 6 weeks straight and your plots are extremely, like they're vibrant green. There's no brown at all. And these are clover plots in the middle of summer during the drought. So, you know, I'm a shining example of what you can do. And it's not me being, you know, having this great property, so to speak. It's just doing a few things differently. And even in my property, I need some major work in this area. So when you have challenges, it pushes you to think differently. To your point earlier, it's like I had weeds in my bean plot and it was helping sustain moisture. And it's like, okay, well, that might be a good strategy. But how do we have beans, clean beans? And then how do we have plants adjacent that actually will support that without having to worry about spraying? And that's another piece of it as well. So, you know, anyhow, I just want to add a little bit to the story there, John, for something for you to think about on your farm as well as other people, because it is possible to survive these drought conditions and really have these better designs and be way more optimizing a property during the drought. And it will set your property apart from every single property around you and those that are, you know, wanting to get into this system of design. This is certainly, you know, beyond, you know, what you're going to learn on YouTube. And that's the whole point of it. So, all right, my rant's over. So I want to get into the hunt. And one, I want to talk a little bit, you know, it's funny. I sent your buck to Josh and Mark, my two buddies that I talk to a lot. And I'm like, look at this stud for Vermont. And they were like, holy cow, that's a huge Vermont buck. And I know like we judge deer based on location, but you know, this, you know, some of these Midwest bucks, you know, they're just incredible deer. This is a stud. I mean, this is a stud buck in Vermont. And I just want to commend you for that. And getting these deer to that older age class, that's a big deal in your area. I mean, nobody's really passing up quality deer like that. So, you know, you're able to get age on these deer. And so let's talk a little bit about how that's happening as well as your hunt.
Yeah. So that's being in our area here in you know, the Champlain Valley in Vermont, there's a lot of hunting pressure and it's tough. And, you know, from my last podcast I did with you last year that, you know, I lost a stellar target buck right opening morning of our archery season last year. And, you know, right out the gate to get slammed was like, man, it really set me back. And I'll never forget you asking me, you know, how'd that make you feel? And, you know, what's your plan now? And, you know, it really hit home and it really made me, you know, think hard about going into this year. What was I going to do to try to, you know, to be that guy that, you know, that can try to go out the gate and get it done early before, you know, your odds of success really start dwindling. And that's a major issue here is, you know, trying to, you know, get them get a buck and when they're patternable and before the rut really starts sending them all over the place. And so that's kind of how I went into this season. And, you know, I kind of alluded to that too, that I kind of put my eggs in one basket. The plot that we have where I harvested this deer is in basically the heart of the property. It's kind of naturally a hub, social hub for the deer. You know, being early fall like this, the bucks are still kind of huddled up, and you know, I was able to capitalize. So I just want to touch on one thing before I forget, but one of the things that helped us this year on the farm was having a bit of diversity in the types of food plots. So although majority of stuff, like your big things, the beans and corns was struggling because of the drought, but I also have an alfalfa plot here that, you know, I was contemplating possibly tilling under this spring just because it looked like it was really struggling. I thought, well, it's been 4 years, maybe it's time to replant this. And in the drought, that alfalfa actually flourished. The weeds all were dying off, and, you know, the alfalfa having a deep tap root just absolutely took off. And that's where I saw this buck and another target we had here on the farm. I started seeing them, you know, focusing more on that alfalfa just because it was still lush and green while everything else was burned up. So I got some visuals of these bucks, knew they were still in the area. I actually, a couple of weeks ago, was hauling a trailer for work, left the house, and, you know, it was half a mile up the road, and this buck that I ended up harvesting, I almost harvested early with my pickup because he was coming out of the neighbor's property out of their corn, and I literally had to lock the brakes up and give the trailer to not get him, and he really didn't care. He just was in that big buck slow saunter across the road mode, and it was really cool to see him up close and personal, a little more personal than I wanted to, but it really fired me up, and he was heading back in towards our property, and he was out of velvet, and he looked really good, and it really fired me up. So I, looking into going into this season, I knew, you know, I had to hit it hard early. I took this opening week of archery season off. It didn't open until Wednesday, but I took the week off. I used Monday and Tuesday to prep, get my clothes washed, and got my Ozonics bag. I mean, I was trying to get everything tuned up and squared away to make sure I was gung-ho and ready. And there was a lot going on around us. And this is big for this area. And I know I've talked to you in person about this a lot too, John, is paying attention to what's going on in surrounding properties. And the farm next door, they were agitating their manure pond. They were starting to spread manure in some of the fields they had harvested their corn off of. And, you know, the stench was unreal in the air. We had a cold front coming. It was a north wind that was, you know, cranking pretty good that Tuesday before the season opened. My father has property on the other side. He was spreading manure over on his side in his fields. And so I'm like, all right, this is good. You're kind of pinching from both directions. And then that Tuesday night, our neighbor to our north started cutting trees, and they had a giant tree chipper in there chipping them. So I was like, all right, if this doesn't have the deer pinched into this place at this point, then something's wrong. So I was pretty pumped going into sit. I got down in my stand, and the north wind was blowing 15 to 20. And, you know, there's times I'd hang onto the tree and ride through it. And I was looking online and like, well, it shows the wind's supposed to lay down here, you know, around 6 o'clock. So I'm like, come on. And my deer activity had been historically pretty early down in this plot. You know, usually by 5:30, 6 o'clock, there was deer coming out and feeding around. I would get pictures. And, you know, it got to be 20 after six, and the wind was laying down, and like, man, you know, come on. And then sure enough, I looked across the field, and he was the first deer to come out. He came out, you know, probably 140 yards out, and I put the binoculars on him. I took a couple of quick pictures to have in case he decided to do something else. And actually had a couple smaller bucks come in behind him. They were out feeding, and I instantly, buck fever totally took me over. You know, I'd spent 30 plus years of hunting it. You know, you think it would go away, but it doesn't, and it didn't. And I was like, I instantly started shaking. I'm like, he's 140 yards, and I'm shaking like this. This is this
long. That's sit. Awesome.
And so I got my shit together, basically got myself, you know, situated, make sure all my equipment was in order. I didn't have any bangers or clangers or stupid stuff that could happen, and just kind of taking it all in, watching them feeding out of my beans. And then all of a sudden I caught movement to my right, and another 4-year-old buck that my wife and I had a lot of pictures and videos of last year came out at 20 yards in front of me, and he's a beautiful another stud buck for Vermont. And early season, I was going into my season thinking this was the buck I was going to harvest, and then the one I harvested kind of outgrew him and just, I don't know, won me over. So I had this buck, and we call him Romy, just because Romy last year literally had him on every camera around the farm all during the rut. He was everywhere, and I'm assuming he's probably going to do that again this year, which I'm hoping he can survive the gauntlet. But so he came out, and my target buck saw him, and I thought, oh boy. And sure enough, he bristled, and he came marching right over, and I had both bucks at 30 yards in front of me. You know, this buck I harvested did a big snort wheeze. I thought maybe they were going to walk up there in front of me. There was just a lot of movement, so I'm patiently waiting and watching as my heart was pounding. And then finally they both just kind of relaxed and were getting ready to march out into my clover. And as soon as he turned broadside, I had a 35-yard shot and hit him. And he went out to the other side of the field where he'd come in, and he was standing out there with young bucks, and I could see the blood pouring out of him. And it was just like you see on the videos. He did the woozy doozy, and down he went. And it was surreal. It was so awesome, and such a good feeling to, you know, to be able to understand and control and have some, you know, systematic dynamic on plots, and, you know, the spots you've helped me cut, and Josh, and, you know, just where we've created bedding and pinch points. And it's just so awesome to be able to, you know, reap the reward of all the hard work. And it's a super good feeling.
Yeah. I mean, and especially to get it done right off the bat. I love two pieces of this. You took a few days off to prep, knowing, you know, there may be some good weather coming. Obviously, it's the start of season, so these deer are a little bit untouched at that point. But then having that other buck that you originally might have thought would have been your shooter this year, and then making the decision to pass, knowing... Now, I got a question. If the other buck, the one that you killed, was not in the field, would you have shot the 4-year-old that first came out, or would you have waited for the other deer?
You don't know how stressful it's been for me leading up to this, because... that same scenario has played out in my head a million times. Like, what do I do? And I'm so thankful it worked out like it did, because I wasn't put in that situation, you know. And we've obviously, you know, I've got a fleet of kids here that all love to hunt. And, you know, I kept telling myself, you know, I try to play this out, and maybe, you know, if I do harvest him, you know, one of my kids can get a chance at this other buck. And, you know, you beat yourself up constantly with scenarios.
Yeah.
You know, no different than here. And, well, the neighbor's got a picture of him over here. My brother actually had a couple pictures he had sent me recently of him, of my target over at my dad's. And, you know, so it's just, you're constantly playing this game and trying to figure things out. One thing that I had noticed with this buck is, you know, my wife and I have been doing a bunch of firewood, and I tried to stay out of my core areas and cutting, you know, around the areas that I know aren't going to be as disruptive. And there's a spot that I've cut, and every time I've cut in there, this buck has showed up down in this where I killed him.
Yeah.
So I had that in my head too. So sure enough, Tuesday I went up and cut some firewood thinking, you know, maybe, you know, it's just, it's funny. You never know. You gotta pray all the, you know, ducks line up in an order and, you know, that it'll work out. But you definitely don't want to overlook the little things and, you know, patterning and, you know, trying to learn an individual deer and what their characteristics are and what they're bothered by or not. And, you know, it's no different than neighboring pressures and agricultural practices and, you know, everything going on. You got to always look at the big picture and, you know, just and be ready to strike and be prepared. You know, you're having your clothing and, you know, everything ready, and you really can't do enough, and you don't want to miss a step. You know, it's stressful, but it's fun. And, you know, those older deer, you know what it's like to hunt a heavily pressured area. They're not dumb. Coming into archery season, I feel, is your best chance because they haven't been tuned and bothered very much. And, you know, that's kind of my new approach. I love hunting during the rut. I love seeing the activity and whatnot. But if you're really truly targeting an individual deer, you got to try to get them when, you know, they're calm and predictable.
This is an interesting point. So I had to get my daughter on the bus, and I just said, you know, I got a good shot of killing tomorrow morning, but I get her on the bus and she leaves at like 7:25. So that kind of shoots my morning, but I'm like, you know, I could probably sneak in a transition. I'm like, you know what? I'm way too conservative and I just don't want to educate anything. And, so I said, no, it's gotta be a first, you know, I got to get there an hour before any transition. And true to form, that one shooter buck came through around, I want to say 8:50 thereabouts. And the point I'm trying to make is what I ended up doing is ended up driving around scouting the neighbors. And there's an area like adjacent to not my particular property, but a property that I hunt pretty consistently. I don't leave my area. I hunt right here. I don't want to leave. I like the comfort of being at home and just chasing these like local mystery deer. And anyhow, there was like five trucks hunting adjacent to this particular area that I hunt. And I'm thinking to myself, holy moly, you know, it's opening day and it's littered in there with just poison, right? That's the way I look at it. But scouting the pressure, scouting your neighbors, you mentioned some of the agricultural activities, but I just listened to your story, and we're coming from when I first started out there trying to hold deer, you know, just trying to change the dynamics of things, where it was a mindset shift. And like now we're like targeting multiple 4-year-old bucks, playing out scenarios like what one should I shoot? And then, you know, obviously you had a great first hunt. And then, you know, you're just kind of in the driver's seat now where these seasons are going to continue. There'll be some ebbs and flows, but, you know, when it boils right down to it, you're kind of the driver, you know, in the truck right now going down this road, and you just got to keep doing smart things and being intelligent about how you make, you know, emphasizing certain improvements, et cetera. And then my bigger thing around this is I just see this mindset shift in you personally where, you know, this has become, I don't know, you're extremely strategic in all the right manner, you know, in all the right ways. And you're finding just enjoyment in every probably piece of putting together the plan, and not that you didn't, you know, enjoy it before, but you're enjoying it in kind of a tactical way. And I really kind of appreciate that part of the story, because it's, you live on the property, you know, work the property, you've got a lot of people to manage to hunt that, and you're still shooting 4-year-olds in an area that doesn't traditionally have older age class deer. And that's older age class in our areas, if you know, anybody's not familiar with portions of the Northeast, particularly in your area where there's quite a bit of hunting pressure. So I just want to emphasize that point for folks. So you can take a property, and my goodness, the properties that have, you know, equivalent mindset and folks passing deer. And, you know, I've been on a ton of those properties this year where, you know, guys are shooting 150s, 160s consistently. You know, they're passing up deer. They're looking at herd dynamics a little bit more than they used to. And they're just getting a lot smarter on how they're managing the population. I mean, you're kind of in that driver's seat position, which is just, it's incredible to see where you guys have come from. And just, I mean, we're just talking a handful of years here, you know?
Yeah, no, I agree 100%. It definitely is a change in mindset. You know, you bringing the perspective of, you know, what's going on in the woods is way more important than what's going on in a food plot and what you, you're presenting them with, you know, in a food plot and what they, you know, you see promoted primarily. You know, there's a lot more in-depth look at a property than just what you're planting. That's been huge. I know I sent you a picture of one of the spots that you and Josh and I had worked, and it was one of the shelters you guys had made, and I sent you a couple of pictures, but I couldn't believe how beautiful that was. And I actually, when I was in there on Tuesday cutting wood, I went in a little bit further than that and got into a spot that we had opened up that was self-facing off of, you know, kind of a ledge area down into a neighbor's property, and a lot of grasses had grown in there. And I was on the tractor, and a buck stood up probably 40 yards from me and kind of yawned, looked at me, and was like, "What the hell are you doing in here?" And pottered down the hill. And, you know, I don't know if he was a shooter, but he was probably a 3-year-old, that, you know, and it was just another aha moment. You know, I really, after he left, I walked around and looked all over. I'm like,
we're leaving today and entering a world of Mickey Mouse waving, princess meeting and greeting, lightsaber clashing, the Twilight Zone Tower of Terror dropping, banshee flying, Space Mountain launching, galaxy rewinding, what's the whole network galaxy rewinding, fireworks igniting, world of other worlds. For whatever you love, infinite worlds await at the most magical place on Earth, Walt Disney World Resort.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers. For a rich, delicious experience, whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
You saw the game-winning play once, but have to replay it 3 times on the way back to the hotel. Because some moments don't end at the buzzer. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.
This episode is brought to you by Peloton. Break through the busiest time of year with the brand new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus. Powered by Peloton IQ. With real-time guidance and endless ways to move, you can personalize your workouts and train with confidence, helping you reach your goals in less time. Let yourself run, lift, sculpt, push, and go. Explore the new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus at onepeloton.com.
President's Day savings are happening now at the Home Depot with up to 40% off select appliances. Looking to upgrade your fridge? Check out LG's newest model, serving up ice in all kinds of styles. Cube, crushed, craft ice, and now new mini craft ice straight from the dispenser. From cold brew to fizzy favorites, these refrigerators will have you entertaining like a pro. Shop President's Day savings and get up to 40% off, plus free delivery on select appliances like LG at the Home Depot. Free delivery on appliance purchases of $1,498 or more. Offer valid February 5th through the 25th, U.S. only. See store online for details.
The world moves fast. Your workday, even faster. Pitching products, drafting reports, analyzing data. Microsoft 365 Copilot is your AI assistant for work. Built into Word, Excel, PowerPoint, and other Microsoft 365 apps you use. Helping you quickly write, analyze, create, and summarize. So you can cut through clutter and clear a path to your best work. Learn more at Microsoft.com/M365 Copilot.
This is awesome. You know, I need to replicate this. It makes total sense. It's a frosty, cold morning. This buck was here laying in the grassy bed. A nice, warm sun, you know, thinking life is good. And guy on a tractor came and got his ass up, you know, but it's moments like that that, you know, it's, and then looking at the big picture and realizing there's a lot more that you can do to a property than just throw seed in a plot and, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's a lot more levels to this. All right. Well, I will, when I release this, John, I will include the picture of you and that nice steer. Thank you for taking those cool, nice pictures. I thought those came out great. I appreciate you get up early sharing this. You know, this right off the bat, this will obviously come out early so people can think about this, motivate them to just be more tactical and, you know, kudos to you. I hope the season continues to go. I'm sure you're on a super high right now. I'm sure you're going to enjoy the rest of the season. There's no pressure on you at this point.
Good talking with you, John, and I appreciate the conversations and look forward to talking about future hunts.
All right. Sounds good. Talk soon. See ya.
Maximize Your Hunt is a production of Whitetail Landscapes. For more information on how John Teeter and his team of experts can help you maximize your hunt, check out whitetaillandscapes.com.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.